Hey Alex, it's Michael. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I am super. Thanks for joining me. So, where are you from originally?
That's a tricky question. I was born in Vancouver, Canada, but I moved to Hong Kong with my parents when I was a baby. So I grew up in Hong Kong. I did my middle school there, my high school there, and I graduated there. And then I went back to Canada for my first degree, and now I'm in London in the UK.
So, how old does that make you?
That I am 25 now.
If you're 25 years old, when did your parents move to Canada?
So they never they oh they moved back. It would have been before I was born. I think they moved back maybe in 1989, 1990-ish. And then I was born there. Then they moved back to Hong Kong in 1993.
But you keep saying back. So are your parents originally from Hong Kong, right?
So they kind of similar to me, they grew up in between both places, but now they live in Hong Kong. Yes.
Got it. And did they leave because of the sort of impending handback of Hong Kong to China in 1997, or that's just incidental?
To be honest, they would know more, obviously, but my understanding was that because they moved back to Canada quite a while before
Before
the
that, yeah.
handover. So I don't think that it actually had that much to do with it. I think it had more to do with the fact that at that point my grandparents were over there and the
Got
rest
it.
of the family. So we're actually the only kind of branch of the family that's in Hong Kong. The rest of them are still over there.
Yeah, there's always been a really interesting relationship, at least as far as I could tell, between Hong Kong Chinese and Canada at large, right? It always was very easy for Hong Kong citizens to get citizenship or just residency in Canada, and there was a lot of back and forth back then, so fair enough. In the end, when you went to Canada to get your undergraduate degree, it wasn't really anything having to do with Hong Kong. It was just your family had been there for a long time, or at least been back and forth for a long time. So it doesn't fit into a normal pattern, which is interesting in and of itself.
I mean, there were a few things going on just personally at the time. So I am going to be a lawyer. I start my training contract in next year, September 2019. But that path wasn't always clear. Essentially, what happened was out of my mom is a lawyer, so she wanted me to do law, not necessarily practice law, but she said at some point you're going to study law. Because it makes you employable, which I think, especially many Asian families will relate to that kind of sentiment. And I said, all right, mom, I'll go study law, but I wanted to buy myself a bit of time first because I didn't feel I was ready. So I said, I'm going to go do a BA in Canada and hang out for 4 years and, figure out what's what. And that actually turned out to be, a very life-changing experience because when I went to Canada in my first year, I was very proud of being from Hong Kong, very loyal to the city. And I almost had this, to be frank, it was quite a rude disdain for Canada because it was different, not because there was anything wrong, but because, things weren't the way that I was used to. And some things it didn't make sense, not culturally, but for example, the way that like healthcare works and getting my driver's license and stuff. So there's these little ticky-tack kind of everyday things were very different. And I was like, well, everything is better in Hong Kong. And actually over the 4 years, I went through this journey where, I learned to actually really love a lot about Canada. And in a way, I don't think my parents would be happy to hear me say this, but in a way, I really kind of started to turn my back on Hong Kong because I had a history there where I didn't fit in. I was bullied a lot as a kid and stuff like that because I'm a little bit, westernized third culture type. So I found that, Canada was actually a much better fit for me. And that resulted in me, when I went to the UK to study law, the plan was to go to the UK after Canada and then come back to Hong Kong. So up till I went to London, I was following suit. And then in my final year in London, I told my parents, I don't think that I can move back home anymore. And they were like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I have to figure out something. So I have to figure something else out.
So can you talk to me a little bit about bullying in Hong Kong? My guess is, and you and I have never met each other, but my guess is from an appearance, from a pure physical appearance standpoint, you would resemble or at least look like everybody else around you. In other words, if you didn't walk or if you didn't talk and if you didn't, you know, nod your head in a certain way, you probably resembled a lot of the people that were in school with you. Did you go to international school or did you go to local Hong Kong school?
I did. So I went to Canadian International.
Got it. Okay, that's even more interesting, right?
Yeah, which is, I mean, to be honest, like I love the school. It means a lot to me. I went back, last time I was in Hong Kong, I went to visit, and it still has a kind of emotional resonance for me. But at the same time, you know, as I was alluding to, the experience wasn't always great. I do look predominantly Chinese. My parents are both a little bit mixed, just enough. And this is a very weird place that I find myself in, because typically what I find is that Chinese people or Asian people will look at me and they think you're a little funny. There's something a little bit different about you. Like, I don't really, you must be not fully Chinese. You must be, you know, very foreign somehow. And then I look at them and I say, like, yeah, like a little bit. I mean, I grew up in Hong Kong and I'm like ethnically Chinese, you know, but I am a little bit different. And then when you go outside of that, anyone who is not ethnically Chinese will say, oh, but you just look Chinese.
Right. So it's this really weird combination, right, where to your peer group, to your ethnic peer group, you seem a little bit different. And yet to the rest of the world, you seem just like your peer group. And that is the real definition of like third culture, right, where there really is a question. And we talked about it when we first started, you know, interviewing. It was like, where are you from? Well, I don't know really. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, to be honest, it's been something that I've struggled with. I mean, my entire life, right. There are so many kind of not, I want to call them microaggressions that I've been dealing with. The tricky thing about the experience that I had was that, you know, I wasn't growing up, I wasn't sure why I felt or looked or seemed different to everyone. Right. You know, I was just kind of me. And the reason for that was because, you know, I went home, my parents are native English speakers. I went home, I spoke English. I consumed, you know, predominantly North American media, watched television. I have a very kind of North American accent, even though most people who are educated in Hong Kong don't.
Right.
And to be honest, I don't really know how that happened, but that made it really alienating for me when my classmates would say, hi, you're different. And I was like, am I really that different?
Because you've always been you, right? You've always been you. And this is the really interesting thing about the way people perceive you. And this is really part of this whole concept we talk about coming home, right? And when it's really hard to come home, and that is who you are and who you've always been, and the perception of who you are and who you've always been are two completely different things, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I think, I mean, for example, I don't know how many times I've gotten into a cab, a taxi in Hong Kong, and, you know, I'll start chatting with the driver just to be nice, and they'll say, like, oh, where are you from? And I'm like, okay, this again. Why don't you take a guess? And they guess, you know, America, the UK, anywhere that's not Hong Kong, right? No one believes that I'm local. And whatever they say, I typically, you know, nod along and I'm like, ah, yeah, great. You know, sure. You know, I can be whoever you want me to be. But that's something, I mean, those kinds of experiences, to be honest, like my classmates called me names and made fun of my accent and stuff like that. I mean, there's a whole list of things that just growing up in Hong Kong, I kind of got used to, but I shouldn't have, right? And it wasn't until I got to Canada and I looked back and I kind of was appalled at the things that I had myself experienced, and I didn't really even think about it because it was just where I grew up.
Well, the other really interesting point is that you left Hong Kong when you went to university originally in Canada, and you said you maintained a small disdain for Canada itself, and you weren't really sure what the foundation of that was. It's even more interesting to me because it wasn't like it was all, you know, what do we say, like rainbows and butterflies when you were living in Hong Kong anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was just, I think what happened with me, I'm just gonna, you know, lay it all out there.
Yeah.
For talking. Yeah. But, you know, having grown up in an international school, being, you know, socioeconomically comfortable.
Right.
And also at the time, my peer group was not particularly ethnically diverse,
Right.
right? I
Yeah.
think that if you go to Canadian International School now, the school's grown much more, so they do have a much more international background. But I was there a long time ago, and predominantly the students were Hong Kong Chinese.
Got it.
So the way that I was educated socially was in quite, you know, a narrow-minded way. So I brought that with me to Canada, and I had to kind of re-educate myself socially. You know, I used language that you shouldn't use because it's disrespectful to certain communities and stuff. And people were like, "Hey, you can't say that." And I was like, "Wow, like this is new because no one ever cared before. I mean,
Right, we
no
said this
one
as a
around
what,
me was affected by this,
right?
right?"
Whatever you were saying was just being said as a matter of course as you were going through CIS, right? That was just a fact, for better or for worse, right? And
Yeah, absolutely. So when I went to Canada, it was eye-opening, and I think that was the difficult part for me, was the re-education. You know, when you come from, you know, my peer group, I went to Canada, and people were talking about, I don't know, like social politics and stuff, which I didn't really understand, and I think it took me a little bit of time to wrap my head around. And then by the time I got into my, you know, third and fourth year, I had made really good friends who helped me open my eyes a little bit, who helped me be a little bit more compassionate. And then actually, that's when I turned around to kind of my peer group in Hong Kong, and I said, "There's a whole world that we haven't really seen because we didn't have to,
right.
but now I've seen it, and I can't go back,
Well,
you
yeah, I
know."
mean, that's the whole point of things, right? Like words, some words can't be unsaid and some sights can't be unseen, right? And once you've experienced them, you can't take those experiences away. It's really hard to do.
Absolutely, yeah.
So before you left to go to Canada for university, was there any trepidation? Were you s not scared, but like, were you concerned at all because of the experience you'd had by being in Hong Kong and being at school and maybe being sort of feeling a little bit of an outsider? Like, did you feel like you were going home to Canada, or did you just like, I'm getting out of here, I just want to do something new?
I think it was the latter. I was quite excited to leave Hong Kong because I hadn't. At that point, I wasn't having a great time in Hong Kong, so I was excited for something new.
Right.
And Canada, you know, when I went to Canada, I went to a different university than a lot of my classmates. So I said, "I'm not going to know anyone. I'm going to have a fresh start," which I think, you know, a lot of people feel that way. I don't think that's uncommon.
No.
And yeah, so then I got to Canada, and I felt, you know, immediately more comfortable with myself, I guess, because obviously, you know, I came across some people who were not particularly respectful, and I had to deal with a different kind of, you know, racism and stuff like that when I got there. But, you know, you make good friends, and I met the right people, and they were really supportive and open. So I guess when I went to Canada, I was relieved because I felt that I could be, you know, more myself. There wasn't as much pretense around my community. So I felt that it was a really rewarding experience.
But so would you encourage other kids to do the same thing? In other words, to go abroad and just to expand their horizons and maybe study in a place where they're not necessarily as familiar and where there's a different worldview than where they're from, whether it's better or worse, right? The worldview doesn't have to be better or worse, it just has to be different. Do you encourage kids to do that as well?
Absolutely. I've made very little effort to go back to Hong Kong because I've enjoyed my experiences abroad so much. To be honest, pragmatically speaking, it's hard to say, right? Because I'm not in any position to say, you know, what experiences are good for, you know, you to have or not to have, and I don't want to you know, impose that on anyone. But personally, I found that going abroad was, you know, really enriching, and I think that I would be much worse off if I hadn't had the opportunity to learn more about other countries and other cultures, other religions. I think that, you know, I don't really believe that ignorance is bliss. So, even though I've had to kind of grow up a lot and confront some difficult situations, confront myself in some really difficult ways, I think that ultimately it was, for the greater good, and I'm better for it.
Right, so you have not gone home since you went to school in Vancouver. Meaning going home, meaning you haven't lived at home for an extended period of time. You have not moved back to Hong Kong. Is that right?
No, I mean, yeah, that's exactly right. Like, I've gone back for summers
Sure.
to, visit my parents, visit friends, and do internships and stuff. But I haven't spent more than a few months there since I left for a university the first time, and I
Right.
don't know that it's on the horizon for me really to ever move
To go
back.
move back. I think you and I are really similar in this respect. I mean, we haven't talked about this even before we started recording. I haven't lived in the United States since I left in 1990. So I've been
Yeah,
away
fair.
from my home country since before you were born, right? Does that make
Yeah,
sense?
yikes. Yeah.
Right? Because you're
Yeah,
25, I
absolutely.
think you said, and I haven't lived there in 28 years. So
Yeah.
I always like to say that I feel like a third culture adult.
Right.
Because I spend more than half of my life living in Asia. So imagine being, an externally looking Caucasian man
Yeah.
living in Asia since he was 24 years old, but maintaining American citizenship, but your entire adult life. So all of your sort of formal experiences at work and in love and in everything else have been in Asia,
Yeah.
not in Boston or in New York or in wherever. And yet I look one way, but I probably think and behave another way, very similar to you, but completely in reverse, right? In other words, when I meet people in Asia, my thought process is maybe more Asian than it is American. But you can't tell that by
Yeah,
looking at me, right?
absolutely. No, absolutely not. And I think that, I very well, I can't tell you right now, but I very well may be on the same journey,
You are.
Yeah,
It
being in
sounds
the
like it.
UK. So I'll look back in a couple of years and be like, yep, that's what happened.
But so now that you're in the UK, is the experience in, are you in London?
I'm in London,
So
yes.
is the experience similar? Like, do you feel yourself still growing and expanding and thinking, okay, now I'm getting new experiences, I'm learning new things as well, and this is just adding to the expectation for myself that I'm just not going, and back is a is an interesting word anymore, right? But you just feel like I'm not going to go back and live in Hong Kong. But then where does that leave you living, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's it is the back is a funny word because I don't really know where I call home anymore. I mean, Hong Kong has kind of become where my parents live, and obviously I still have a connection to it. Canada, I spent 4 years that were very formative and transformative, really impactful, and I'm very close to the community that I was a part of there. But now I've been in London coming up on four, I think it's been 3.5 years in London now. Which is, soon I'm going to match the time that I
Was in
spent
Canada.
in Canada. So now I don't really know where I'm meant to be loyal to, but I think that that might be a little bit of the point is that I've become kind of a global citizen and I just rotate around year to year, in terms of where I'm going to be, that, I mean, I think that for the foreseeable future, I'm going to be in London. I do think that at some point I want to go back to Canada, but also London didn't make a lot of sense for me for a long time either, because when I there was a period where I realized that, having come to London, I missed Canada a lot. And I at that point had already kind of had the inkling that I didn't want to go back to Hong Kong. And I
Right.
wasn't sure how I would do that because of, pressure from my family and the community that I was a part of, So then I thought, all right, well, maybe I can. By the time I was in London, I said, maybe I can go back to Canada. But I think the problem with Canada was that having left, you lose a bit of the edge that you have when you're not in the country, right?
Right.
So, for example, if I was looking for a job and they said, well, we have a saturated job market here with Canadian talent and you're over there now. So I said, well, okay, what am I going to do? And then I so happened to kind of figure out that London maybe was the best of both worlds in a way, because London has a much more kind of international history than I was exposed to in Canada, but also a little bit more, westernized and ethnically diverse and multicultural than Hong Kong. So think I have yet to start working, but I think that London could be a good fit for a while.
But do you take flak in London because your accent is, basically North American?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. My girlfriend makes fun of me all the time.
Okay.
My friends do, and my friends do too. It's fine. I roast them back for not pronouncing their R's. It goes back and forth. It's fine.
But it's a different
It's very different.
right. It's a different kind of let's call it fun making or making fun when you're in your 20s than it is when you're, in your early teens or kind of like tweens, right? Because it's not meant to be mean. It's more meant to be like sardonic or just humorous, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, being at a different, stage of life, and also, to be honest, the kinds of discussions that people are having on social media about inclusivity, and respect for other communities has played a huge role in that, right?
Right.
Because it just so happened that those two kind of stages coincide, because people weren't having the same conversations 10 years ago when I was going through that kind of air quotes bullying,
Right.
The other thing that I was going to say is that in London, this gets into some politically contentious stuff.
Go ahead.
But in London, there is a strong multicultural presence. It's very diverse, and people are, I think, used to, seeing all kinds of different people from all around the world, hearing different accents. So I actually had a worse experience in Canada, not because Canada isn't, obviously the country as a whole prides itself on having a rich history of immigration and being diverse and multicultural, but the particular area that I was in geographically and the university attracted people who were not necessarily from the big cities. And it was that experience in particular that gave rise to, I think, some of the ill comments that I had to deal with in Canada.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was just going to say,
Sorry,
like,
go ahead.
I've always found, and again, it may be my own personal bias, but I've always found London in particular to be one of the most diverse and one of the most accepting places in the world for that diversity. And I think part of the reason why, like you said, is it's just been that way forever. And because the UK in general, but England in particular, has been sort of taking in and letting out international people, for centuries, that it's just
Yeah.
something that people take for granted there. It's just in the natural course of history that that's just happened, where as places like Canada and, the United States as well, not only is that not as common, but just the history of it is not that long. The United States hasn't even been around for 300 years, for God's sake. So this stuff takes time.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And also, I mean, there's a very clear parallel that you can draw, which is, London is a huge city. New York, Toronto, Vancouver are all huge cities. So those are not the kinds of places that you would necessarily expect to come across
Fair enough.
that kind of, ignorance and stuff. So if I so so when I was in when I was in Canada, I spent a lot of time outside of the big city, which is, where you might get that kind of, more narrow-minded mentality, the same way that you would here. It's just that I happen to be in London, which is the most diverse place in the UK. But I understand that if you venture further out, then, it may not be significantly different. So it is, I think it is kind of a, big city, small town divide.
Yeah, I think so as well. And I think that's true globally. And again, depending on which country in which you reside, it just the degrees of that difference get worse and worse, right? So particularly for a country like the United States that just simply hasn't been around for that long, the degrees of difference between the big cities and the smaller towns are just much more stark than they are in a place like the UK, which has been around since I think the beginning of time, right?
Yeah, that
At
is
least in
true.
comparison, in relative terms.
Yes. Yeah, as far as we understand time, given that it's the year 2018, yes.
Yeah, fair enough. So when do you graduate? You're getting your advanced degree now. What are you studying now?
So I did my Bachelor of Arts in Communications when I was in Canada, and
Got
then
it.
I came to London to do my LLB. So I did two undergrads, which is so the LLB is a law degree, and then now I am doing my master's in law, specializing in technology law.
Interesting. So, what do you see yourself focusing on when you graduate?
I have a training contract with a firm in London that has a strong technology law practice, so I'm hoping it's not guaranteed, but I'm hoping to be able to join that team. I've kind of stumbled into this passion for IT law, and I think a big part, not, I mean, so to circle back a little bit to the original point, a big part of why I'm not going back to Hong Kong is not just the cultural difference, because I mean that is tenuous, but another big part of it is that, you know, what I want to pursue as a career is not as available to me in Hong Kong. Those opportunities aren't really there. Because if you look at Hong Kong's industry, especially, I mean, if you're going to be, I'm a lawyer, so I'm going to be white collar, but if you compare the white collar industry in London versus Hong Kong is almost entirely kind of finance, banking, medicine type stuff driven, you know, whereas I think London, just being in the West and a little bit closer to the United States, there is more scope to work on, you know, cool technological projects. That said, also the UK is literally, they invented law, right? So
Right. I mean,
that's not
it.
a bad place to be, yeah.
No, we talk about this a lot actually out here, right? Forming a company in Hong Kong, forming a company in Singapore, it's based on what we call, in quotes, English law. And that's not because it's in English, it's because it's from England.
So technology law, I mean, the cultural stuff aside, if it's possible to put aside, it was also, it just so happened that, you know, the career options were much better for me over here, because if I went back to Hong Kong, I'd probably be doing something, hopefully something worthwhile, but also likely something that I wasn't passionate about, you
Right,
know?
right. Yeah, and look, you're hitting a wave as well, right? There's a whole new wave of IT law that needs to get settled over the next 5 or so years, and you're just going to ride that wave into doing probably some of the most interesting legal questions that have come around in a while, right? So if it focuses on ICO law or cryptocurrency law or anything that has to do with the blockchain and that type of technology, just the innovation in technology will cause innovation in the law, and that alone should keep you interested for a while, right?
The other big thing that's happening is the GDPR, the new General Data Protection Regulations, is coming into force literally right now, I think at the end of this month. And that is going to be like everyone's talking about that, you know. So I've had some people, you know, small companies and stuff contact some of, you know, my classmates and myself, like, oh, like, does anyone know about data protection because we need help? And I mean, there's so many opportunities over here right now, yeah.
Yeah, sounds like your mother was quite prescient when she said, "Study the law, and you'll always be employable." Nice call, mom.
Yeah, thanks, Mom. I am thankful for that. I mean, I wasn't sure. I wasn't always sold on the path, but she said that it was a good idea, and I went with it. And I'm glad I did. I don't think that what I'm doing now, I don't think that she intended for me not to come home. I don't think that this went exactly according to her plan.
It never does.
But yeah, how could it? Yeah, but I'm doing something I think that's better for myself, and everyone in my family has been really supportive of that, so I'm really thankful.
Right, because that was going to be the last thing I was going to ask you is it's sometimes really difficult for families, right, when their children go away and find it really hard to come home because you want to maintain that sort of family connection. But on the flip side, the great thing, one of the great things about the world today is that it's really small and it's getting smaller every day. And the ability to communicate, not just through voice, but through video and, sort of the instantaneous connectivity that we benefit from every day makes it easier to do those things and to stay closer together.
Yeah, it was definitely tough breaking the news to my parents, because essentially, you know, my parents were kind of counting on me coming home, and they had this plan set out for me that
Sure.
I didn't, that to be honest, I mean, outwardly, I didn't really contest it very vigorously, right? I kind of acquiesced and I said, you know, all right, you know, my parents want me to do this, I'll do it, out of, you know, respect and deference to them. And also, to be honest, I wasn't sure, right? I wasn't sure whether or not I would move home either.
Right.
But when that idea solidified in my head, and it became clear, you know, I don't think that I'm going to move back, then I had to have that conversation. And it's always tough, I think, because you feel like you don't want to let your parents down. But I think, and it was also tough, particularly for me, because my mom is a lawyer and she'd invested so much in kind of helping me get my career started and get work experience. Right. So it wasn't, I think that had that relationship not been so kind of direct and intimate, it might have been a little bit easier, but there was kind of an emotional buildup, if you will, you know?
Yeah.
So it's tough to have that conversation, but you break the news and your parents say, all right, well, you're going to go live your life and I'm proud of you anyway. I was like, all right, great. Yeah. Like, I hope that this works out. And they say, well, I hope it does too. And they just kind of, I don't know what they did. Maybe they just closed their eyes. Maybe they still have their eyes closed waiting for something to happen. I don't know.
No, I'll tell you what I know. And that is, as a parent, when your children become self-sufficient and when they become confident and when they become eloquent and when they become respectable, all you do is go into a room, look at each other, and just feel really proud. And I'm sure your parents feel really proud.
That's very kind of you. I think that I know that that's true.
Yeah, I can tell.
So I'm very fortunate. I think that, I mean, I understand that some people might struggle with that more, actually, because I am very fortunate to have a supportive family and very supportive friends who made it as easy for me as it possibly could have been. And I feel for, you know, some other kind of third culture people who listen to, you know, this show and relate to what I'm saying, you know, it might not be so easy for them.
Agreed. And I think that's the perfect way to end, actually, Alex. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.